Victorian Periodical Parade.
Okay, so the other interesting thing, as you know, is that I am reading like a nonfiction article every week that is from the same issue of the magazine of the novel that we're reading, Lady Audley's Secret. And as I said last time, generally they would be often including news articles on similar topics because we couldn't just like Google and be like, how did that boat work? I'm curious about boats now. They would have to anticipate what their audience might be wondering about and preemptively include that information. But what's interesting, we were just talking, my students and I, not a whole lot is happening in the book yet. We're only on chapter 6. The action is sort of amping up. Last week, we were introduced to a character coming home on a big ship who had abandoned his wife and kids, or in his mind, left them to earn money. And so one of the articles we found in that magazine issue was about a home for children that were orphans of parents who had gone away to work on a ship. Not a lot is happening in this issue. And I have to say, there weren't that many articles that I could find any sort of rhyme or reason why they would be related to the plot. So I think what I'm going to do today, I'm going to see if I can show you at least something of what this looks like. I think maybe a cool thing to do would be to show you a little bit of what this magazine looked like in its structure. So this is the London Journal, and this was not the first time that Lady Audley's Secret had been published. So at this point, it's already a breakaway success. And this magazine, the London Journal, was called a penny weekly. You may know the term penny dreadful from the TV series, and penny dreadfuls were magazines with really horrific, often very gory stories that as the literate class expanded into lower and lower classes, so we have greater and greater literacy, people who could read but didn't have a lot of money would buy these penny dreadfuls, which were cheap and had as closer to a comic book. Although, I mean, it's a Victorian version, so it has still a lot of flowery language. I have a kitten visitor today. Yeah, you don't like the penny dreadfuls? I actually have had a lot of difficulty discovering whether a penny weekly is the same as the penny dreadful. And my semi-educated opinion, using both my expertise in Victorian literature and culture and like the little bit I've been able to find, is that they're not the same. Now, penny weekly, it's like, it is for a lower class audience, or a like lower middle class, maybe. It's certainly not like the highest of highbrow literature. Like, it's not the New York Times that people are getting, but it's not the New York Post either. It's not the tabloid. It's like, I don't know. I want to say like Redbook or Cosmo. It's like, it is meant for the growing lower middle class, but it's not from the way I can see that these stories are not nearly as gory and horrific, nor as heavily illustrated as a true penny dreadful would be. So it's important to know that that's the audience here, is like a lower middle class, but not like, it's not like a tabloid level or a penny dreadful. And honestly, what you can mostly see is that it's mostly novels. It would be mostly sensation fiction, like Lady Audley's Secret, or like really exciting sort of pulp fiction page turners. Okay, so this is all a novel. In fact, I would say the London Journal seems to be more full of novels and less full of articles than most magazines I've seen, which I think probably is part of its identity as serving a population who wants like really good quick reads, page turners, rather than an upper middle class or upper class that fancies themselves wanting to get the news and like a little bit of super highbrow literature. Here, though, they always have a science section. And of course, you can't read this, but... And then they'll have each of these paragraphs. There's a hard return. And it's just like a little weekly digest of science. So I'll read just a couple, and you'll see how short they are. Blasting powder. Some improvements in the manufacture of blasting powder have been patented by Messrs. Kilo and Short of Delable, according to which the ingredients used are nitrate of potash, chlorate of potash, nitrate of soda, sawdust, tan, and sulfur. Sometimes they dispense with the potash and sometimes substitute turf or peat for the sawdust, or for both sawdust and tan. And that's it. like just a quick recap of like what's going on in science this week for people that maybe, you know, these are probably people working longer hours than like a Duke or a Duchess, you know, they want to know about their world. They want to be the educated middle class, but they need it, you know, quick Cliff Notes version. A new railway break. After the last meeting of the Institution of Civil Engineers, a model of a railway break was exhibited by Mr. W.G. Creamer of New York. This plan was stated to embrace first an arrangement of compensating or balancing brakes actuated by one lever and distributing the pressure equally on all the wheels with a small expenditure of powder. Secondly, an attachment of reserved power to the brakes of every carriage in combination with a non-elastic signal rope so as to enable the driver to instantly apply the brake in case of danger or on the separation of the train or any part being thrown from the line, the brakes would apply themselves automatically as each carriage was entirely independent of the others and the brakes were available wherever they were placed in the train. So you can get a sense of how short that is. And there's maybe like five of these little pieces. I don't want to get off too long on this subject because I want to make sure I can go through the structure of the whole issue and what they're usually like. But, oh, hold on. I just noticed something. Okay. I noticed a new article that I hadn't seen. The railway inclusion is one of the only things that I could link to Lady Audley's secret thematically, because essentially the rise of mystery novels has much to do with the increasing technology in the 1860s, when this is written, post-industrial revolution innovations and urbanization. So the way I describe it is like cities are growing and becoming more anonymous and travel is faster primarily because of railways. So first of all, whereas you might have previously lived in a village with like 10 people, and we all know, it's probably not 10 people, let's say 100 people, okay? And we all know that like Mr. Jones over there owns like 10 sheep. And he's like the main sheep guy in the village. And all of a sudden, this new guy comes to town. Nobody knows him or his family. And then one morning we see him riding away on one of Mr. Jones's sheep. We all know who took it. Like, we're a small enough town that we know who's new. And there's probably witnesses to things happening. So we can all go chase that guy down because he's riding away slowly on a sheep or something. And then we can like get the sheep back and we know what happened. But if you take that and imagine a town the size of London with millions of people, many of whom don't know one another, and you lose a pocket watch, you're never going to see that pocket watch again. There's hundreds of people who could have taken it that you've encountered in a day. There's probably no witnesses because everybody's busy and running around. And so this comes with an anxiety about things being able to happen that people can't trace. And also people being able to disguise themselves. Like, they didn't have social security cards at this time. The way you knew who somebody was either because you took them at their word, or they might have had like a letter from a mutual acquaintance that said who they were. So there's a lot of novels in this mid-century period in the 1860s that are about the anxiety about people, like identity theft, identity fraud, people claiming they're somebody they're not. And that's because of this growth in urbanization and anonymity at this time. Secondarily, as I mentioned with my silly example of the sheep, before railway travel, it was simply just easier to chase somebody down. Now, with really high-speed railroads, you actually can have fugitives in a different way than you pragmatically could before. So we have tons of stories of like, this guy got away on the train and the guy that's chasing him has to go and get on the next train. And you'll see that in Lady Audley's Secret. And then you'll see people checking the train schedules to be like, okay, this is the fastest they could get to this city. So now I'm going to telegram ahead to that railway station to tell them to catch them, even if I can't get there fast enough. So the speed of travel and communication just enables a more exciting, compelling mystery story at this time, along with the anxieties of anonymity and urbanization in this period. And you have a setup in which you have people working out their worries about being defrauded or duped or fooled, and their fantasies of catching them, that they can better facilitate that and frankly just make a more interesting book, because like a slow speed horse chase is not as exciting, frankly, as like a railway chase, you know, and sending the telegrams ahead. So this is the only real connection I've been able to find here thematically this week. But so this is the section on science. You'll see it goes from around here down, and now we're back at a novel. novel, all on this page. Then we have a little, this is like sort of society information. This is about the Princess of Wales's wedding presents. Yeah, so just like a little, like, if you needed to go to a party and know what was happening in the UK, you could talk about that and sound informed. The Woman in Black or Buried Alive is the next novel we see. Novel. Lady Audley Secret, novel. And this is called Waiting to be Hanged. This appears to be some sort of short story or part of a novel, but it doesn't say chapters the way a novel typically would. A bust of the Princess of Wales, like a new piece of art they're talking about here. So back to being like art and society. Marriage festivities at Edinburgh, more society. And then they always have this very long section called facetiae. And you know the word, you may know the word being facetious, which means being silly. And it's honestly a really surprising amount of the magazine that's just like silly little one-liners. So I'll read a couple to you just so you can get the gist of it. I'm trying to find one that would be even a little bit translatable to our modern sense of humor. Okay, so this says, the housekeeper says, "What is the meaning of this venison steak on the butcher's book, Bridget? I haven't seen it on the table." And the cook says, "Why, you see, ma'am, it wasn't for the upper table at all. James can't abear mutton, so I had to get a bit of venison for him." So like, butcher's book, that means like a receipt that they bought a venison steak, but she hadn't seen the venison steak served. I mean, I think the joke is that they bought the steak for themselves, for the servants. This says, just an oddity. It's called just an oddity. An inscription on a tombstone in a country churchyard reads thus, "John Smith accidentally shot as a mark of affection by his brother." Okay, here's one that you'll get kind of their silliness. "Why are the states in a terrible confusion and everything so unsettled?" Civil War, you know. "Because for 2 years past, they have been under a Blinken government." A Blinken, like an I guess that was a phrase there for an unstable, a Blinken government. Oh my God. It's mostly just really bad puns in most of these. But you have to really like think about the pun because they don't, you know, use the same language we do. So that's the facetia. Then there's always a statistics section talking about like trade and like this is a loan to a steamship, number of people in a militia, household receipts. So like this says mother of pearl. "To clean mother of pearl, wash it in whiting and water. Soap destroys the brilliancy." So like this is just like household tips, gems of thought. "Marriage," this is a gem of thought. "Marriage renders a man more virtuous and more wise. The father of a family is not willing to blush before his children." So just like good, meaningful quotes like we might share on Instagram today. Miscellaneous, and it really is miscellaneous. Like this discovery of a sculpted bull at Burghead. "Considerable interest has been excited among local antiquarians by an important archaeological discovery made the other day." This one is, there's an article here called Friendly Thieves about your friends not returning books you lend them. That's still in miscellaneous. Then there's always a section called Notices to Correspondents, and they will address people by names. It appears that people would write in letters asking them things and they would write back to you, but they never say what the letters were. So I guess like if this were us, we would just write into the newspaper and like look every day to see if they had responded to us. Possibly a way to get readership up. So this one says, "To HIA, to fill up decayed teeth with tin foil, they should first be cleared of all the decayed matter in the cavities. Then the latter should be carefully dried and the tin foil gradually inserted by means of an awl and a blunt end of a small punch to completely fill up the holes. With care and patience, a common pen's knife will do the cleaning." So it's like they're just answering. Somebody apparently wrote them a letter like, "How do I fill my own cavity?" And there's just pages of this. And that is the basic structure of this. I think if you go back and like rewatch some parts of this, if you have time, you'll see how this is like your sort of average, like middle class, lower middle class housewife who like might need some info on how to clean things, might be wanting like a cool phrase to share on her non-existent Victorian Instagram, but it's kind of a similar idea. Some light reading. She wants to keep up with the latest science and the latest things happening in the country around her so that she can sound well informed. So that's it for today. Hopefully next week there'll be a really cool article that's much more relevant to what we're reading in the book. But I think this was a good use of our time today. So please like, subscribe, share. I think I'm supposed to say that. So we will see you on Monday. Bye.
Background music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incomputech.com, such as Magic Escape Room, among others. Victorian Periodical Parade.